Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, it's Mr. Encore. Fantasy sports and politics crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy sports and politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on. Peace.
Yes, yes, peace be with you. And once again, it's the FSP Crew Show. And you know who this is. I am the host, JT, a.k.a. The Master. And I'm joined by my co-host, Jeff the Joker. And as always, haven't said it in a while, I'm saying it today. We engage in conversation, give you information about the wonderful world, the crazy world, the wacky world, and the hateful world sometimes of fantasy sports and politics. We have a good show in store for you tonight. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is the number to call if you want to talk to me or Jeff. Or if you want to be in the chat room, you can also do that. We do have a chat room for your convenience, for your chatting pleasure. For those who like to chat, you can ask a question, make a statement, make a comment, whatever, in the chat room. We'll respond to it on air. It's all open. Doesn't have to be about what the subject matter we're talking about. You can jump on anything you want to talk about. It's always like that on this show, and we do it all for you. So with all that being said, and me talking for whatever amount of time, let's bring in my co-host, Jeff Joker. What's up, my man?
Hey, Jerry. Nice to be on the air with you.
Yes, sir. Two Jersey guys. I think that's what we're going to be today. Unfortunately, Black's under the weather. We wish Black a speedy recovery and to get well. He's dealing with some issues, and hopefully he can straighten those issues out and be a lot healthier than he's what he's been now. But being that as it may, let's talk about the first thing I want to talk about. Now, I can go in a couple directions here. I think I'll go this way, okay? I'll go in that Terrell Suggs, T-Sizzle, from the world champion Baltimore Ravens, decides that even though they won the Super Bowl and enjoying the spoils of being the champion of the NFL, one of their rivals happens to be the New England Patriots, and Terrell Suggs had this to say on a New England station that was an interview on Wednesday at Boston's WEEI AM on Wednesday. He's promoting a film, and he's producing a film. And one of the things he got on the air with was to promote a film. But instead of talking about the movie, Terrell addressed his disdain for the three-time Super Bowl champ, who we called arrogant effers. And he, after he said that, he said, "Do I apologize for what I said?" He says, "No. Do I mean what I said?" He says, "Yes." Another quote: "Could I have worded it a little better? Probably, but the fact of the matter is, you can't really consider it a rivalry because y'all have a few more championships than we do, but this has been steaming for a while." He says this also. I'm going to read this, Jeff, and then we talk about it. There are 32 teams in the NFL, and I guarantee the other 31 hate the New England Patriots. And that was a quote from Terrell Suggs. He touched on every Patriots target, save for Bygate. In the 9-minute spot, which he cut short, saying he had a train to catch, from the league's preferential treatment for Tom Brady to New England's seemingly cozy relationship with CBS. This is another quote. There was the whole invention of the Brady rule. Years before, I hit Drew Brees and I accidentally tore his knee up. No rule was made. Of all the quarterbacks in the NFL who got their knees blown out when they got hit, Carson Palmer got his knees blown out. But then one guy got hit and changed the whole rule for the NFL. He also goes on and says, they let us do whatever to Ben Roethlisberger. My quarterback, Joe Flacco, gets mistreated. Michael Vick got hit in the head so many times you think he was in a boxing match. None of those are flags. You try that on a number 12, you might be out of the league. They're definitely going to suspend you. I'm just saying, certain quarterbacks are treated better than the rest. Then he was asked if he thought that Brady, a two-time MVP, is a great quarterback. He said, I can't deny the man's talent, but wouldn't say that Brady is better than Flacco. Let me finish this. He also picked apart the handling of the Patriots' schedule, saying that a Patriots-Dolphin game in Week 17 got the high-profile 4:15 time slot on CBS over a Colts-Texan game that had playoff implications and also marked the return of Chuck Pagano. Now, I had talked about this. I don't know if I talked about it on the cruise show, but I talked about it on, I think, my show on Sunday. I talked about it on Vic's show, and I may have talked about it on Mac. But I didn't talk about a regular season game. I talked about the playoff games that I thought were more of a prime time versus the Patriots playing. He goes on to say, it's a little fishy. As for the source of the hatred of Patriots, it all comes down to respect or lack thereof. And I'll finish this off by saying they'll go and say whatever they got to say in the media, but behind closed doors, they don't think nobody can play on the field with them. Watch a game where your team plays, and when they're not getting the calls going their way, see how they behave. I don't think the New England Patriots respect anybody. That's personally how I feel. And that's the end of the quote, end of the article. Jeff, what do you think about what Terrell Suggs had to say in that article?
So some people, and by some people I mean Terrell Suggs, mm-hmm. Need to just keep the mouth shut and smile, and I don't think they got their rings yet, but enjoy that Super Bowl ring. It's like, if I knew him, I'd say, Terrell, you won. You won the Super Bowl. That's
right.
It. You know, everybody else, on all the other 31 teams could huff and puff all they want. You got the last word. You got the ring, And this guy is very outspoken. And you know what the thing is? When you're a hated NFL team, that means you're winning a lot.
You know?
And every team, I could see, a lot of teams having their own culture. You see that at jobs. You could even see in company, the culture could vary from department to department. I mean, I think, though, and believe me, if the Patriots weren't winning, it wouldn't matter. But, because they keep winning and, because of their coach and maybe some of their star players, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, there's a lot of speculation, And I think Brady's not the only one. Certain star players get preferential-type treatment. And then, of course, there's people are still talking about Spygate. And I'll admit, I'm one of them. And
mm-hmm.
The fact is, Patriots have not won a Super Bowl since Spygate, but they did keep winning.
Mm-hmm.
If that team fell apart, that would have been very suspicious. But they did keep winning, so that doesn't look as bad. And they've lost two Super Bowls since then, but they were close games. And the Super Bowls they won were also close games.
Mm-hmm.
They could have used Vinatieri maybe for because in those type of games, a guy with clutch kicker, one of the best clutch kicker probably. So sometimes
you know, sometimes Daryl Suggs is on the money, but sometimes you just got to, you know, shut your hole. You know, I just put it bluntly. So,
well, my question is this to you, Jeff. True, they've won three Super Bowls. They've been in five. They lost, quite naturally lost two, but they haven't, since Spygate, they haven't won a Super Bowl. So, and some of those Super Bowls they won have been close. My question is this. You think if they were still doing Spygate, those close games would have turned into wins? Because whatever they did in Spygate helped them to get over the hump and get those wins in the Super Bowl?
It, you know, it could have, and that just part of, you know, the mystery of it. But the thing is, they weren't a total fraud because they kept winning after that scandal. But, I mean, my thing was, I mean, the first, this kind of, you know, gets glossed over now, but the first Super Bowl they lost to the Giants, that's, you know, at the time they were 18-0, big points spread. That's still one of the biggest upsets in pro sports history.
Right.
And, you know, and I must confess, I'm a lifelong Giants fan.
Well, we
and,
I know that.
Oh, yeah, but you know, in case anybody's listening. And, you know, that was one of those things. That's one of those things that never gets old. It just never gets old. It's just that significant.
Right.
And, you know, I admit, I thought the Giants had a shot going in. The thing that concerned me the most going into that game was the extra week of preparation, which, you know, Belichick is very good with that extra week. And I thought it would have been better for the Giants if it wasn't. But, you know, it's the same extra week for both teams. I just thought it was more beneficial to the Patriots. And the Patriots were dominant, but they had cooled off a little bit, but still a dominant offense that year. Even when they cooled off, they were still beating a poo at everybody. And, you know, it was such a shocking defeat. You know, everyone would say, what happened? And, you know, Giants played a great game, made very few mistakes. I think maybe one turnover, a handful of penalties. And, you know, because they had to play a great game to beat that New England team. They couldn't have played an average game and beaten that team.
Right.
And they got heat on Brady without blitzing too much, which is very difficult to do. But if you could do that, you got a good shot. But, you know, I could talk about that game all day. And,
they provided the rest of the league for a blueprint on beating the Patriots by getting pressure on Tom Brady. And any teams that since then have done that, the Patriots, especially Tom Brady, has really struggled. So that's basically the blueprint now.
And I remember, you know, just discussing the game, and believe me, people were talking about that game for months afterward.
Sure.
And I said that you know, the Patriots had won the three previous Belichick Super Bowls, and what was the difference between that one and the one against the Giants? And I said they had two things they didn't have against the Giants. They had the secret videotape for whatever that was worth, and they didn't have Vinatieri. Because there was a point in that, I don't know if you remember this part of the game, they could have tried a long field goal. I think it was like about 45-yarder, maybe a little more. They could have tried a long field goal, but Gostkowski was a rookie, so I think they went for it on fourth down because it was at that part of the field.
Right.
And it didn't work. And I remember thinking to myself, I guess they didn't want to put the game on his shoulders, but I'm thinking if they had Vinatieri, they would have tried it, and they probably would have tried it, and he probably would have made it, you know.
Yeah, that didn't make any sense to me. I definitely would have I tried it if it was me. So
the thing is, he hadn't been making pressure kicks all year. That guy was just kicking about 7 extra points a game every week, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, if he's been through a whole season of 17 games, and including the playoff games, even though that's his first year, with all those games under his belt, I know officially or technically he's a rookie, but in my opinion, he's not a rookie because throughout those games, he had to do some type of pressure kicking. So I understand the Super Bowl is a different level, but that's what you pay the guy to do. regardless if he's a rookie or not. And if he's a rookie and he's a starter, starting kicker, then you think he could handle it. And I would think that they would have let him kick it. But hindsight is 20/20.
And one of the things that Suggs said, to answer to what he was saying about Brady getting special protection, one of the reasons why Brady gets special protection is because he's a pocket passer.
Mm-hmm.
And the rules are not just for Brady. They might enforce it better for Brady. But if you're a pocket quarterback, you get a little protection. Once you start running around, you don't get that. So
right.
That explains, why Brady and Peyton Manning get treated a little differently than, the more mobile quarterbacks.
Yeah, and I looked at Mike and Mike in this morning, and I think Herm Edwards was on there along with Marsh Larris, and they brought up the same points you talked about, Jeff, that because they're pocket quarterbacks, for lack of a better word, get preferential treatment because they're not running around like Michael Vick or some of these other mobile quarterbacks like Roethlisberger and are taking those hits, whether they're legal or illegal. The refs have, refs have pretty lenient with defensive players when the quarterback is moving around in a pocket versus Peyton Manning or Tom Brady or any other quarterback, for the most part, that just sits in a pocket. But especially those two, because those are probably the two most immobile quarterbacks in the league, and just ironic that they're the most effective from the pocket. So it is what it is. All right. I wanted to talk about him, and we did. And let's move on. We're still going to stay in football. How about a 484? You know what that number is, Jeff? You know what that number is?
I think that was the 40 time for what's the name of that linebacker from Notre Dame everybody's talking about?
Who are you talking about? You talking about Brian Bosworth? Or are you talking about Monte Teo?
Oh, great reference. I like that. I was and Brian Bosworth is in the Hype Hall of Fame. For those who didn't know, he was a very good and a very publicized college linebacker at Oklahoma in the '80s, and didn't quite work out for him in the NFL, and. I don't know. With Monte Teo, he seems like a head case. I was thinking maybe like Ricky Williams, except not as good as Ricky Williams.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because at least when he wanted to, Ricky Williams got it done and had a pretty respectable career.
Yes.
I recommend the 30 for 30 special on Ricky Williams. That guy is kind of out there, just really, this is a cliche, but I think it's true about Ricky. He marches to the beat of his own drummer. I don't think he's a bad guy, and I never got that impression. He's just a different kind of guy,
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that as an insult, just some people are very different. But I don't know, I think something about this Teo guy, I don't like. I think his last two big moments, the combine and the national championship game, he didn't look so hot. And when he's playing in the NFL, you got to block out the distractions. Some of these guys, the star players, you wouldn't believe what goes on in their personal life, and they still strap it up every Sunday and kick butt.
Right.
And I don't know, this Teo guy just doesn't seem right. There's just something really odd about this guy. I don't get it. And that whole, I'm still scratching my head after that scandal. He's not a horrible human being, but there's just something very, very strange about that guy. And I don't know if he's got the couillons to play the NFL, to put it bluntly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's part of it, you know. I mean, I think you got to be wired a certain way. You got to have your head on straight. And this guy, and believe me, they're not going to leave him alone about this scandal until he becomes a very good, solid player. And
right.
Some cities, the fan bases are a lot friendlier than others, and the media in some cities a lot friendlier than others. And if he goes to, you know, a city that's a little unfriendly, he gets off on the wrong foot. He could be out of the league in a couple of years, you know.
That's true. You're right about that, Jeff. And he was interviewed, if you know this or not, I don't know if you watched the NFL Combine or not, but he was interviewed after his day was over, or his event over, whatever. He was interviewed, and he said that he wasn't happy with his performance, quite naturally, because he wasn't too good in the field drills either. That he would be, he normally runs a 4.6 or 4.5 or whatever. So people are going to be looking for him to run 4.5, 4.6. I don't think it's going to happen. And supposedly he lost weight, 10 to 15 pounds, if not more, going into the combine. So you would think if you lose weight, you're lighter, and that would translate into being quicker. And running a 4.84 doesn't tell me that you're going to be that much quicker come your pro day. But we'll see. I still think he's a Brian Bosworth deja vu all over again. And before he gets into the league, I mean, all hype and doesn't even get a chance. And believe it or not, Mike Mayock has a number 2 on his board as an inside linebacker. I don't know what he sees. I don't know if he's got a liking for Notre Dame. I think Mike Matt was doing Notre Dame games this year.
That's right.
But,
he was.
But as disappointing as this guy is, I don't see. And he's excuse me for saying this, but in my opinion, I look at this kid, and he looks like he's a little light in the ass for inside linebacker. And it proved out when he went against the big boys in Alabama. They beat him like he was a redheaded stepchild in that game. And I think he gets in with a bunch of big boys that are bigger than the guys in Alabama and have more ability week in and week out. I think he's going to get his shorts handed to him. So I don't know, man. I don't understand the hype. We'll wait and see. Come his pro day, I think his pro day is sometime in March. We'll wait and see if Monte Teo is as a lot of people think, including you and I, is all talk and no action.
So what do you think? This is a different kind of knucklehead, not the same kind of knucklehead as Monte Teo. That the other highly ranked linebacker, the guy from Georgia, who got the DWI right before the combine.
Ogletree.
That's right. So what do you think of him? Which to me, up until that DUI, I think, well, he's a kid, you know, I'll give him a break. And then, because he had already been in some trouble, and then the DWI right before maybe one of the biggest days of your life, just makes you wonder, what is that guy thinking, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Jeff, you are so right. And they had him on the NFL Network, and he was grilled extensively, supposedly, by the New Orleans Saints. You know, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. They're football players. They're not Einsteins, and they don't come from MIT or any Ivy League school. And some of these guys are immature. Some of these guys have
Some of these guys are in their early 20s, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
you shake your head and, like, what, you know, what were you possibly thinking? One of the biggest events of your life that could give you a path to millions, and you get arrested for a DUI days before it happens. I mean, like I said, these guys aren't rocket scientists, but you got to have some type of common sense. You can't always explain it off to being 20-something years old, especially when you're going to take a big step and walk into a locker room with a bunch of big boys. So it boggles my mind why these guys and it seems like, well, it doesn't seem like, it happens every year. You would think that, you know, you hear these guys in college hear about guys that are going to the combine, you know, like a junior or a would-be senior or a sophomore, guys that are still in college, still fighting to get to the opportunity to maybe next year get invited to the NFL combine, seeing these guys left and right do stupid things, say stupid things and do stupid things, like this guy Ogletree. But the following year, it's history repeats itself. Maybe not with the same person, but the same type of stupid garbage that you would think. Now, look, this guy did the stupid stuff and it hurt him, or even the guys in the NFL, young guys that first get into the league or guys that establish getting in the league and do dumb stuff, and it happens every year. DUI, assault. All kinds of crazy things happening when you're getting millions of dollars to play a game, and you have too much time on your hands, and all you have to do is to keep those millions and keep gainfully employed to play a game is to stay out of trouble and don't do anything stupid to bad mouth your. Or make your family look bad, make you look bad, or make your organization look bad. And these guys do it year in, year out. These things come about, but the name and faces change, but it's still the same type of end result. I don't understand it. Don't understand it. Can't understand it. Probably never will understand it. I mean, if it was me, if I had the opportunity to play football and all I had to do was make sure I didn't get in any trouble to keep my millions, to live a nice high lifestyle. Some of these guys never had a job other than what they're doing is playing football. They never had a 9-to-5 job, never had any other kind of job but playing football. And don't know what it's like to, on the outside world, to a lot of them may see their parents or their relatives grind it out day in, day out, living paycheck to paycheck, but never get the realization that, you know, if I don't keep on a straight and narrow, I'm going to be in the same boat. Have the mentality that, you know, I'm playing football, I'm special, I'm going to get treated special, and anything I do, it's all right because I'm special. And that's the mentality that gets you in trouble. That's the mentality that can get you in trouble. When you think you're indestructible, nothing can hurt you, you're Superman, and no matter what you do, somebody's going to take care of it. That's the type of attitude that gets you in trouble. And some of these guys, I think, have that attitude, it follows like DUIs, getting busted for pot, getting busted for whatever that you shouldn't be doing when all you had to do was think about it, which they don't at times. And I know I'm ranting, I'm going on and on, but I have to get this out because it boggles my mind that these guys have the world in their hands and they feel like not feel, but they do things to do self-destructive things. Let me put it that way, which is, you know, makes no sense to me. You got any comments on anything I said there, Jeff?
No, I totally agree. But it's I had my moments when I was in my early 20s, but I never messed up anything like a possible NFL career, you know. DWI, I'm sure he wasn't planning on getting caught. A lot of this stuff, it's just these momentary lapses in judgment that, you know, these guys learn these priceless life lessons. And the third guy, you know, who's getting a lot of attention at the combine for off-the-field issue is Tyrone Mathieu, the Honey Badger.
Mm-hmm.
And at least he's stayed out of trouble since October. Okay, it's been still less than a year, but at least he didn't, you know, after getting kicked off of the LSU team, he's stayed out of trouble since then. I think people expected a little more at the combine because he's had plenty of time to prepare for it. He might not be a great cover corner, but he looks to be a playmaker in the secondary and also in the return game. So, but he, there's no doubt, getting kicked off the team for, you know, marijuana cost him, he cost himself millions.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
You know, somebody's going to take a chance on him. And believe, you know, and if, you know, if he could stay out of trouble and whatever, then, you know, I hope it works out for him. And, I mean, there's a guy in the Cincinnati Bengals, Bernard Scott, had a lot of off-the-field problems going back to high school. His last couple of years of college, he stayed out of trouble. He was very forthcoming about his off-the-field problems. I mean, he had been incarcerated. One of the incidents was punching a coach. But in his defense, it's not as bad as it sounds. It was he was in a fight with another player at practice, which that happens all the time, and the coach was trying to break up the fight, and it was an accident. It wasn't like he just walked up to the coach and slugged him in the face, you know?
Right, right.
You know, but it just sounds very scandalous. Like, oh, he punched out a coach. And,
right.
You know, so he had these significant off-the-field issues. And, you know, of course, he ended up with the Bengals, the Bad News Bengals, the modern-day Oakland Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
And to his credit, you know, he's been very forthcoming about it and has been stayed out of trouble since becoming a pro. And he's had a respectable career. I don't think he's an every down back. He's had some durability issues, but at least he's staying off the police blotters. And the thing is, he's a young guy, you know, and somebody gave him a break, and he made the best of it. So good for him.
Yep. And Black is in the chat room, and he said a honey badger, who's Tyrone Mathieu, did 4 reps of 225 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
Four reps. 4 reps. Are you kidding me? You would think that a guy would come into the and there was a few of these guys, these DBs. Now I know that they're not supposed to be huge work. Well, I don't say huge workout guys, but not excuse me, supposed to be huge guys with muscles, but 4 reps of 225, and I don't know if this guy is hyped more than or less than Monte Teo, but I think he's got a lot more ability than Monte Teo has, and I think he's got a little bit more to prove. Because of what things that he's done, so he's got to restore his reputation with the NFL teams if he's going to get a chance to play in the NFL, which I think he will, because like I said, he's got a lot of ability. He just screwed up with the law and all. So I don't know if you got anything to say about Mr. Honey Badger.
Yeah, he could tell you, he could have used another year in college, but I don't know if they would have taken him back. But, you know, the thing is, you know, I mean, as a defensive back, you probably don't need to bench press –
a ton, but you know what's going to be at the combine. It, I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's relevant or not. It's kind of like a test where you know the questions in advance. You know what to prepare for. So what's he been doing all these months? You know, that's
mm-hmm.
the question. It isn't just the fact that he only benched four times. It's why? How come he wasn't better prepared?
Right. Right, and that has to do with character. I mean, you know this is coming up. It's not like it's a surprise workout. You know this is coming up, just like all the other 300 guys that went to the combine knew it was coming up. And you're supposed to put in the work with whoever or however in order to become optimally prepared when you hit the combine to give your best effort. Because when you look good, you get paid. And if you look bad, you won't get paid as much. So money's a driving factor. But some guys, for whatever reason, just don't have that work ethic, regardless of how much money is involved. An analyst, or I'm trying to think who had said it, but I don't know if it was a player or former player. I can't remember who said it. And this holds true. He says you really see who's dedicated to the game and who is a workout hound versus just playing for the money. When a person is either in the off season or retires from the game. If they let themselves go, for the most part, they were playing for the money. If they still stay in shape and still work out and still do the things, maybe not to the extent they were doing when they were playing, but still do the workout and try to keep themselves fit. Those are the ones that were really dedicated to the game. I don't know how you feel about that, if you think that holds any kind of water or not.
No, it definitely shows something. I mean, the combine, it's not solely about who's running the 4.4 40 or who's doing the most bench presses. It's who's prepared, who's professional, who's mature. That's part of it. I mean, if the combine was a waste of time, they would have stopped doing it. I mean, it's not as important as game film, but, you know, because these guys play for very different teams and they play in very different conferences, et cetera, they need, I guess, some place to gather the real information and, you know, things that you can't get from the film. So, I mean, the film is probably the most important thing, but this, you know, I mean, the combine does have some value. And it's not just the obvious things.
Hey, Jeff, I don't know if you heard about this, but the NFL was thinking about changing or pushing back the draft date.
I don't like that, because then it makes it even harder to get these guys to camp on time.
Yeah, they're thinking about changing the draft, if I'm not mistaken, to sometime in May. I don't know if it's early or late May.
And it's solely for financial reasons.
You think so?
Yeah, I think it was a finance. I'm trying to think what the explanation was, but it was that they don't. NFL doesn't have anything in March, which I guess they write that off. They lose the month of March to the basketball tournament. I guess they have the draft in April. And I guess for whatever reason they thought it would help with their off-season ratings to move the draft into May, which I remember during when they were competing with the USFL, they moved the draft up to February
mm-hmm.
because they wanted to get the scoop on the USFL, and they did that for a couple of years because the USFL was fighting them for almost every draft pick.
Right.
And the teams hated it. I mean, they knew why it was done, but it gave them a lot less time to prepare. And I think they even, at least one year, did it all in one day, and that's when they were doing 12 rounds.
Yeah, that's yeah, you're right about that. And I don't know if it's going to be good or bad if it's just in a thought process now, or they're seriously thinking about it. I don't know how the news got out, but quite naturally, you heard about it, I heard about it, and I think it's a bad idea. I agree with you. I think they should keep it the way it is. The three-day event. I mean, they used to have a one-day event, if I'm not mistaken. Now they changed it to 3 days, because of money reasons and because to make it easier for the teams to regroup after the first round and after the second and third round, and reevaluate how they want to draft day two and day three. So plus. It's a money maker, and being that the NFL is a non-profit organization, they make all the money they can, and it's all for non-profit. What can I tell you? Anyway, we got 18 minutes left in the show. Oh yeah, I wanted to talk about this because I know you probably heard about this one. The latest player, or the most notable player, I think the first player that came out with this, and we're going to talk about this, is that a player at the NFL Combine says he was asked if he likes girls. I'm going to read this article to you. The NFL said it will look into whether questions asked of Colorado tight end Nick Casa at the Combine violated any laws or league policies banning employers from inquiring about a possible employee's sexual orientation. Casa told ESPN Radio in Denver that during interviews with team officials at the Combine in Indianapolis, teams ask you, like, and this is a quote, do you have a girlfriend? Are you married? Do you like girls? He did not identify who asked him such questions. On Wednesday, Casa said on the Dan Patrick Show, he didn't think it was really a serious question. The kid's young. I guess he don't realize or whatever. The NFL says it will look into Casa's comments and that any team or employee that inquires about impermissible subjects or makes an employment decision based on such factors is subject to league discipline, end quote. And this is another a quote from Damora Smith, the head of the NFL Players Association. Said in a statement, and this is a quote, I know that the NFL agrees that these type of questions violate the law, our CBA, and players' rights. I hope they will seek out information as to what teams have engaged in this type of discrimination, and we should then discuss appropriate discipline, end quote. Jeff, I read that article. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like whoever asked that question, I don't know what their problem is. They're either a dope or some real dinosaur, because those are the things that employers are not allowed to ask any employee. I don't understand. I mean, you know, is this some clueless old person? You know, a dinosaur or some young guy who has no clue. Just somebody, I don't know who, they had no clue. It's hard to believe that multiple people from an NFL team, which is a corporation, would sit down and come up with that as an official question. Because I knew somebody who was who was asked an inappropriate question in an interview. And the thing is, there's ways to ask certain questions and ways not to. And this particular person, I know this woman who's an accountant, and I guess the job she was interviewing for required some travel, and the guy she was interviewing with was a real dinosaur and just flat out said, are you married? Because I guess if you know you have a family, it's more difficult with that type of travel.
Which sure.
They can't ask that. They could try to guess it, which a lot of places do. But the appropriate question would have been, are you available to travel? You know,
right?
And
Wait a minute. Before you go any further, Jeff, you mean, this could be an innocent question, because what you described, the job entails traveling or spending a lot of time away from home. You can't ask, "Are you married?"
Right.
You have to phrase it a different way.
Correct.
Really? I didn't know that.
Right.
But I mean, that's good to know. I did not know that.
And then the thing is, for some jobs, they prefer married people because they know a lot of times a guy with a wife and with kids is going to put up with a lot more crap because he's got more mouths to feed. That's not conclusive, but there's some truth in that. And,
right.
You know, some companies, if it's, you know, what they think is their image and whatever, they want married guys with children, you know, because these companies, they're companies, but they're run by human beings who have their biases and whatever. You know, the people who make these decisions, a lot of them are really, really out of touch.
Mm-hmm. Well, no one said, and you have to think about this now. Most of the organizations in the NFL are very conservative organizations, and have a lot of gentlemen that have conservative values or thoughts. So, along with the thought of things that are accepted or maybe not accepted in a professional, and we're talking about football, but I'm thinking of any locker room, a professional locker room, especially when it's a locker room of one gender. You know what? Let me put it this way. And maybe I'm off base here, but I think I'm not. I think the female gender in professional sports are more acceptable of someone that is a switch hitter.
Lifestyle, yeah.
a switch hitter versus a male-dominated locker room. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that, yeah, you could say that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it's right, but I would think.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say. Yeah.
And I'm not saying, like I said, I'm not saying that it's right, but I think that women in a locker room versus men in a locker room feel less threatened than a man in a locker room with a person that may live an alternate lifestyle, float on a different boat. Whatever you want to call it. Put the black right in here. Hey, Jerry, did Mrs. Rawlings get back to you? It is what it is. I mean, you know, have to see what happens and see if the teams that were involved in this, if it actually comes out, or they keep it hush-hush, and along with possible fining or whatever from the team if they're found out to have done this. Along with that, and we're still talking about the NFL, what do you think about this, Jeff? Your best player coming off an injury, and I think you know where I'm going. Your best player coming off a major knee injury, you're going to take a huge cap hit, paying his salary, with a team that's got major holes in a lot of skill positions, and you're looking to either get draft picks or make up players with a cheaper salary. To fill your roster out, and you know who I'm talking about. supposedly, the Jets were actively shopping Darrelle Revis. Quite naturally, he wasn't too happy about it because he read it in the press before, and he was saying that no one contacted him, which really pissed him off. From what I understand is this. How can I phrase this? he is due if they don't trade him, or if they trade him next year, or into another team next year, because his contract is up next year. If they trade him next year, regardless if he's off the books, the Jets still take a $9 million cap hit. I think that's and from what I understand, that's the reason why they're trying to trade him this year, because if they trade him next year, if he's not on the team, even though he's would be off the books and on another team, the Jets would take a $9 million cap hit. And that's one of the reasons, like I said, that's why they're trying to, supposedly, the rumor is that he's being shopped around. And I'm looking at an article, it was said at one time that the 49ers were looking to grab him. And from what I'm reading here, they're saying that it 49ers not likely to pursue Darrelle Revis because of the fact that I guess with all the draft picks the 49ers have, and I think they have 12 to 15 draft picks, which is crazy, and I think three or four in the top 30, top 50, whatever it is, that maybe they don't want to give up those high draft picks to get Darrelle Revis, because they may feel that coming off an ACL, even though he's the best corner in the NFL, he may not be up to snuff to be that. You heard this? What's your comments on it?
Oh, I mean, this Jets-Revis thing, it sounds like a bad teenage soap opera, because on the New York sports radio, it's every day, and it's a tough trade to make because he's coming off a serious knee injury. He wants to renegotiate his contract, which I think he gets every year. At this point, I mean, I know how good he is, but it's a tough trade to make. I mean, San Francisco's in an interesting position because they have more draft picks than guys who could make the team. I mean, they're a very good team, and they've got all these picks. So that puts them in a situation where they could trade. They just traded Alex Smith, which I think that's going to work out well for both teams. I think it's a good deal for Kansas City because they need a quarterback. There wasn't a big-time one available in this year's draft from what it looks like. Mm-hmm. So they're bringing in a good, solid veteran. And, you know, when Alex Smith got benched, I think he was a good soldier. And San Francisco did right by him by trading him someplace where he's going to start. So I think it's a trade that could work out for all parties involved. But the thing is, San Francisco could spare the picks, but it's a tight cap. And if they give all that money to Revis coming off the knee injury, it might make it harder for them to re-sign some of their guys. I think the next one up is Alton Smith. And their front seven is so good, they can get by with an average secondary. But you know, because of the knee, it makes it a difficult trade, because who wants to give up picks? I mean, they have the picks, not everybody does, and a ton of money for a guy with a questionable knee. I mean, you open yourself up to second-guessing, and I think that's what these team executives fear, is the second-guessing.
Right. And the, I don't know if you know this or not, but the NFL set the cap at $123.9 million, which is up from 120.6, so they raised the cap $3.3 million from the previous season. So, we'll see if that's going to make a difference, because some of these guys have been getting cut left and right. But one guy that the Seahawks won't cut is Matt Flynn, because they still think he's got some trade value, and they won't release him, but they're open to trading him. So. Supposedly, three teams that are three teams that are in sore need of a quarterback are as follows. Jaguars, Browns, and Jets. I've been high on this guy since he left Green Bay. He hasn't got a chance to really start except for the one time when he took Aaron Rodgers' spot and blew it up. He got beat out by Russell Wilson, a rookie, this past season. But I guess teams, and they know that he wants to start, so they won't release him because they figure they can get something for him. What do you think about Matt Flynn? And what do you think about the three teams that I talked about? Who would benefit the most with whatever what they have in place right now? I'm not talking about quarterback. I'm talking about skill positions, and they drop Matt Flynn into that to deal with whatever skill positions they have. Who would be a good fit? Jaguars, Browns, Jets.
What about I think Arizona's also looking for a quarterback.
Arizona's also doing a search on Matt Castle.
And they liked Alex Smith, but San Francisco was smart. They didn't want to trade him within their own division,
which usually you
don't like doing that, especially with a quarterback.
Unless you're the Eagles.
the thing is, Jets, they got cap issues because they're stuck with Sanchez, and they're already giving him a ton of money. So, and they got, you know, they got Revis they got to pay, or you might have to pay. Who knows?
Yeah, and Black said in the chat room, I know you probably saw it, Jets looking at Brady Quinn. Oh, my. You know what? You can't make this stuff up. You cannot make this stuff up. Brady Quinn, I thought he was a joke when he first came into the league, and it proven to be just that. One of the most inaccurate quarterbacks, and who lacks confidence and won't throw the ball over 10 yards. I don't even understand why he's still in the league. I don't understand why he's still in the league. That boggles my mind that some of these guys are able to hang on into the league, especially quarterbacks. And they're so terrible that, you know, is the quarterback position that depleted throughout the league that some of these guys can still keep jobs? What do you think about that, Jeff?
Well, you know, almost every team carries three. I mean, occasionally a team will carry two, but three quarterbacks times 32 NFL teams, that's 96 jobs. So if you're in the top 96, you got a job.
Yeah, wow. Well, what can I say? We got about 2 minutes left in the show. Jeff, is there anything that you want to part with before we get out of here?
I know people who think the NFL draft is boring. Then I don't know what they want to. I don't want to know what they think of the combine.
Wow.
But,
yeah.
Big East looks to be adding a couple schools. But it's the end of the Big East as we know it. And I'm not a huge college basketball fan, but I have watched Big East hoops on and off through the years. And looks like it's all coming to an end for the Big East. I mean, I guess this will be the new Big East, but it's not going to be the same. But you never know. It might be bigger and better, or at least bigger. Who knows? But it's definitely the end of a chapter. Because it's the end of the Big East as we have known it.
Yeah. I'm thinking of Chris Mullin, Mark Jackson, Patrick Ewing, and guys of that ilk that used to play in big games against each other. St. John's and Georgetown against Syracuse, Syracuse against Connecticut. I mean, you can go on and on about the guys that have played in the Big East.
The Big East got so big in just a few years. I mean, some of those teams were well established as independents at that point. So, but within a few years, boom! It was maybe the best basketball conference in the country. But I remember, I think it was the first year of the Big East, watching their tournament on local New York TV. This was before ESPN. This is going way
right.
back. I was a little
right.
kid.
And right.
it was Georgetown and St. John's, I think.
Right, right.
And they didn't even have decent sponsors. They kept showing the same lousy commercials over and over again for Dijon roach spray.
Right.
That's how far it's come. And every commercial break, they kept showing the same four commercials, you know, Dijon roach spray and some other real high-class products. And then, you know, it became huge on ESPN. I mean, you know,
right.
I remember years in the 80s, they put three teams in the Final Four. And then where did it all go so wrong? And then the Atlantic 10 got together around the same time as the Big East. And unfortunately, it looked like they were very similar, but the Big East took off and the Atlantic 10 didn't. Also, one of the big schools from the A-10, Rutgers, moved over to the Big East. Hopefully, it'll be a good chapter because before the Big East, East Coast college basketball was really hurting because almost all the great local players from the East Coast were going to the, you know, the North Carolinas and the UCLAs and the Kansas and it really put the East Coast hoops back on the map, and I hope it stays that way. But it should.
Yeah.
It should.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we come to another end of the show. Jeff, I want to thank you for joining me tonight. Black, he jumped out of the chat room, but hopefully he'll get better. Hopefully we'll see him next week. His health is more important than having him on the show. Black, be well. Tune in next week, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. It'll be the FSP show. I'll be the host along with my other co-host, Jeff the Joker. We'll be talking about fantasy sports and politics. That's what the crew does. Crews does here. Tune in Friday. We'll be the No Chaser. It'll be a replay of last week's show. Due to the scheduling conflict, we'll be running a replay of the No Chaser show from last week. And due to scheduling on Saturday, we'll be doing the same thing. We'll be running a replay of last Saturday's show. But I will be back on Sunday with the Master Plan at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tune in. I'll be talking about a little baseball, whatever has been going on the last few days of Friday and Saturday. I'll be talking about the sporting events on those 2 days. And whatever else happens to hit my fancy. With that being said, Jeff, have a good week. Be safe. Be well. And we're out of here.
Yeah. It's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah. Check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics.